Hello, Bonsai friends. This is Evan Pardew of Underhill Bonsai, and welcome to episode 78 of Little Things for Bonsai People. Sorry. It's the year of the Wood Dragon, 2024, and I don't know how much further into the show I should keep saying that, but I guess I'll keep it up. And this time I am joined by my co-host, one of my co-hosts, Carmen Lesko-Bienski. How's it going, Carmen?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fair. I know this episode's going to be late. It's probably going to go into next week. We got a lot of things going on, so. But I'm doing okay. How's Portland weather treating you right now?
You know, it was really beautiful most of the week, and now it's raining, and it looks like we're into cold and rain for like five more days, and I'm not thrilled about it, but the trees like it, so I guess it's fine.
Yeah, it's slow things down for a minute. Wrapping up some repotting stuff over here in the southeast, and then heading into tropical repotting temperatures and prep, and also pruning back first flush growth and doing wiring. And yeah, there's a lot of stuff that I need to do, but I haven't been able to do it yet. So
I was gonna tell you all my whole list of things to do, but
yeah, before we get too much further with banter and what we're doing, I do need to mention that our topic today is going to be some critiques. I attended the BCI, the Bonsai on the Bayou, this year over in Houston, Texas. It was an amazing show. And then I took some pictures of some trees that I thought were pretty cool. And since Carmen was able to attend this one, we normally have to go through and critique some trees and talk shop, I guess you could say. And then also, I'm currently in St. Louis, or actually I'm in Collinsville, Illinois, which the St. Louis Club is hosting their event Bonsai Central here. And if you didn't know from listening to our ad reads, this show was a big deal. And I'll kind of recap what's going on over here this week, or more like weekend. And then we will also have a follow-up where we critique some trees from this show as well. It's a really cool show. But just shout out to our patrons really quick. Go over to patreon.com/littlethingsforbonsaipeople. And we have a Discord, and it's always flowing with juicy conversation about bonsai. We do have some new patrons this week.
Ooh.
Yep. We have a new bonsai friend in Wesley Wissener. Thank you so much, Wesley, for subscribing. And then we have a new bonsai best bud in Kyle Forward.
Kyle Ford.
If that's your real name, Forward, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And then we have a featured best bud this week. I have to kind of shout out my boy too, Nate Murray. He's here with me at Bonsai Central. And if it wasn't for him, a lot of things wouldn't be possible this week for Bonsai Central. I had a pretty dramatic story to tell before we get into our critiques, but it's water under the bridge now, but it was pretty awful. And Nate knows what I'm talking about before we get to it. But also we have our show sponsor, our podcast sponsor, John of Joshua Roth Tools. Thank you, Joshua Roth Tools, so much for sponsoring the show. That's amazing. And then, of course, we have our specimen best buds, Unry UN, Christina Clarforia, and Bill of Bill's Bayou anchoring down the list. And then we'll be doing the full readout at the end of each episode for now on. But yeah, and also Matt O'Donnell, he's our editor. He's an amazing guy. Great,
man.
Great dude.
Had a birthday.
He did.
Facebook told me.
Yep.
Happy birthday, Matt. Oh, Matt O'Donnell.
Matt O'Donnell. Oh, Matt O'Donnell.
Oh, Matt O'Donnell.
All the wrong pronunciations. Happy birthday this past week. We're not going to tell anybody how old you are. Don't worry. And we're all in our 30s and approaching 40s. I know how it is. So. But it's going to be okay, buddy. We're all here together, and you're editing our show, and you're an absolute angel. Thank you so much for cleaning up the audio, making us sound great. So, and then go listen to Matt O'Donnell Wants to Know, his podcast show. It's currently running. He's got quite a few episodes up now, so some great content. So were you going to get into something there with some Portland
news? I was just going to say that we're in this kind of weird spring lull where there's a lot of just kind of putzing around the garden. I'm pinching spruce as they need to be pinched. I'm pinching maples as they shoot out random shoots. Mm-hmm. We just rebuilt some of our bench tops, which was great because some of them were rotting through. Now I feel much safer putting big, heavy trees on them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they don't.
We're gonna do shade cloth next week. Like,
ooh, that's an
operation. Just kind of like a. You know, there's not a lot of crazy stuff happening for another couple of weeks. Once we get into spring seasonal, we'll have some trimming and pruning and stuff to do. But right now it's just kind of like doing all the little stuff around the garden until it's time to prune. Yeah, all those little things, you know.
All the little things you need to do to keep your little trees healthy and happy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I know the shade net cloth thing at Michael's garden can be quite an ordeal because he has the metal framing all through his garden space.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty extensive job, I'm sure, with getting on ladders and chaining things up. And
mm-hmm. We go through a lot of zip ties. But yeah, I think we're going to do that next week. It looks like by the end of next week, we're up into like the 80s. So like right now it's like 50 and rainy. And then in a week, it's going to be 80 and sunny. So like it's time for shade cloth before it gets, usually we end up doing it on like a day where it's 85 and really sunny and it's awful, but
yeah,
gonna try to do it, you know, before it gets that hot. So
yeah, and in the American Southeast down here, it's already, well, I mean, back in my town where I'm not currently, but it's like reaching 90 degrees already.
Ugh.
It's already muggy.
Yeah, it was like hot. 70 the other day, and I was like, oh, it's so hot, but it was only 70. But
okay. Yeah, like one day I woke up and walked outside and I was watering my trees and I walked in and I was like, I was just kind of like wet. I was like, oh man, I know I didn't spray myself with a hose this morning. And then loading up for these shows, every time I unload it, especially when I was in Houston, I was just like sopping wet from just sweat and humidity, trying to get all the trees in and out of the building. But I don't know. It's really interesting too. I think also a topic for kind of today too should also be like convention experiences, like being at Bonsai conventions. I know we talk about this a lot on our show, and we have reviewed a couple of shows like ABS last year, the national show, Say Bonsai that I put on at my nursery, and now BCI and Bonsai Central. Man, we've done quite a bit since we've
a lot of shows, show. Yeah.
And I plan on doing more and more. And of course, when you attend shows, I hope that you will share your experiences too, as well, Carmen, because I know you're doing something really soon. You're doing something really soon. What was that?
What am I doing?
You're giving a speech. You're giving a talk.
Oh yeah. It's not a bonsai show, but
it's still a show.
I'm presenting at the, in Boston, the American Public Garden Association is putting on their yearly seminar in June. And myself and a couple other curators of bonsai collections are doing a panel talk about bonsai. And I guess it's the first time APGA has ever had a panel or any kind of any one of their talks focused on bonsai. So it's like it's a really cool opportunity because APGA is like the National Garden Association. Like they're associated with Longwood Gardens. Like they do all of these different learning things. It's kind of like industry standard stuff for botanical gardens and public gardens. So it's kind of huge. It's a huge step for, I think, public garden bonsai to kind of make themselves known. And I feel really lucky because I've been apprenticing here for 3 years and we'll be going back to U of M when I'm done. But it's a really good opportunity to start connecting, I think, the private bonsai world with the public garden bonsai world. Mm-hmm. And then all of us curators are going to be working together, I believe, to create a collection consortium so that all of the bonsai collections across the country are going to be, you know, publicly accessible through APGA. So, yeah, it's going to be really, really exciting. So I'm going to fly out to Boston sometime in June and give that little chit chat.
Yeah. A little talk about bonsai. If we don't talk about it enough, start spreading it into other parts of, conventions and other plant enthusiast worlds. And I know I've done stuff like I've been invited to do Master Garden Club things. And once I did a Camellia Club, that was really fun.
That's fun. Yeah. I've done a few Master Gardener talks. They're always really into it. It's really cool.
Oh yeah. Every time I'll bring some trees as an example and I'll hold up a tree and I'll tell them the process. Like for instance, like, had this Yopan Holly, and I said, this Yopan Holly has been in training as a bonsai for, let's say, like 5 years. And I found it as a shrub, and I cut it back. And it's always like this gasp. I was like, like,
yeah,
everyone's so amazed, by bonsai. But anyway, yeah, but going to this in Boston is this is a big deal. So
it's a pretty big deal. So I'm excited that I get to be part of it.
Yep. That's excellent. Yeah. And so before I get too far into like experiences with Bonsai Central and the critiques, let me tell you guys a little story that happened to me on the way here. Yeah. Carmen, you might know a little bit already about this because the moment it happened, I was like, the next morning I just coordinated with Carmen. So she kind of had an idea. That's why we're also really late on this recording. It's probably just going to be early next week. And we're just going to do two episodes in the week to catch it up. But I did fully intend on recording that night that this all happened. But basically I packed a trailer. So shout out to Joel Jenkins, of course, one of our bonsai best buds. And he's one of my local homies. So we do bonsai a lot together, and he's gone to a lot of shows. So Joel got his truck and his trailer. He has a really nice 16 footer enclosed trailer with, he's got the whole setup. He's got all the strap down areas. He's got a camera in there so he can look and see what the trees and the stuff looks like when he's traveling. He's got a thermometer in there so he can check to make sure nothing's getting too hot. So yeah, real deal. He's into it, and so he's got himself a nice. Basically, it's a bonsai travel trailer, and
that's cool.
He was very, very generous to let me use it for my stock, and then Nate Murray of the Boot Bonsai, so one of our occasional jump on hosts, which we'll have him on for an upcoming episode really soon here to talk about his experiences with Bonsai Central as well, but. He was coming along, and he brought some of his stock. And so we had so much stuff for the show. We wanted to make sure we brought plenty of good stuff, like bald cypresses from Nate, nursery stock from me, tools from Joshua Roth, and plenty of stuff to like make our table look nice and full. And so I didn't have enough room for my show tree. So I went to that Penske van. It's a Sprinter van. And those are pretty standard. They're the high, you know, high roof or high ceiling, whatever you want to say. They're perfect for carrying around like a good handful of show trees. Unless your trees are enormous, like to the point where they just, you can't fit it in that vehicle, then I don't know what you're doing with bonsai. But I put six trees in that van, because I decided to go big, because, you guys heard from Jesse and, Nathan, they asked me how many trees I would like to bring, and I presented them some trees, and then they were like, bring them all. And I was like, crap. And then I felt like I really wanted to do it as a challenge. And so you had to rent this van, and getting the van wasn't very difficult. Packing it wasn't difficult. Everything seemed so good. And so we hit the road around 2 o'clock or so. And we were driving through the night. We were getting like later into the evening, because we it was a pretty easy drive, but it's pretty boring hitting like going up through Mississippi and hitting Interstate 55, and I was like, you know what, I could record this evening in the hotel if we make it, but it was already getting pretty late. So I remember I had like spoke with you, Carmen. I was like, you know what, let's see what the guys want to do this evening. And they were like, let's continue driving. And I was like, all right, well, that'll put us there at midnight, but at least we'll have a full day, because setup here at Bonsai Central was from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. I mean, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And I was like, this will work out. This would be great. And so we're at this gas station, and we jump back in the vans, gas up, and it's like 9 o'clock, and we start going. And within that next 30 minutes, a living nightmare happened to me. The van started giving me these weird codes where it was like power steering fluid inoperable. System power and powers and brake, power brakes system, low power, or it was just like errors. And it was showing all these weird errors, like blinking, because it was a brand new van. It was like 2023. It had 30,000 miles on it. And so it had all these computer modules in it. It's like giving me all these codes and telling me all these things are like inoperable and there's low power supply to them. And I was like, what is going on? And the van's like blinking and the lights are dimming. And I'm like, this is not happening. And I go to breach from my phone, and I'm like, what do I do? Like, do I call Penske or do I call Kate or do I call 911? I was so confused. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden this lights went out in the van, and I was going like 70 miles an hour in a construction zone on a 55 between Memphis and St. Louis. And so, yeah, all of a sudden I'm in the dark and I'm coasting at 70 miles an hour with 18 wheelers, like flying up like behind me. And I'm just like, I'm dead.
But you don't go 70 miles an hour in a construction zone. No, I'm just kidding.
Exactly. No. This is a spot in the construction zone where it was a big straightaway. There was nothing.
No, I know. I do it too.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody does it. Everybody does it. When you're in the middle of northern Arkansas and you're driving, and we've been driving for already, mm-hmm. we were 3 hours away. We'd been driving for 6 hours already.
Mm-hmm.
And we were ready. We were ready to hotshot it and just get it over with. So yeah, the van shuts off and I can't tell the grade of the ground. Like if it goes like next to the road, because it was barely any shoulder. So I'm like, the grade is either mm-hmm. steep ditch and I'm going to just nosedive and just absolutely wreck this van, or it's going to be fine. And I just went with it, and it wasn't bad. It was a little bit of a grade, but I was barely over enough that I could feel like, you know, when you're on the side of the interstate, I'm sure some people have done it. It's awful.
You could feel the wind of all the other cars coming by, cause you're just like barely off to the side.
Yeah, exactly. Ugh. And you're sitting in your car and you can feel like the shaking of your vehicle every time a big vehicle mm-hmm. passes by. It was awful. And I'm in the dark and there's no lights in this area cause it's construction and there's nothing out there. And I call Caitlin, and she's like, what happened? And I'm trying to explain to her and I'm freaking out. And Nate and Joel are just way ahead of me. They've already driven like probably a good 10 minutes because this whole thing was just, it took so long for me to just figure out what to do.
Yeah.
And so yeah, after a while, finally figured out construction worker that like patrols that area at his midnight shift. Cause there's just where this type of stuff happens. He comes up with his lights on and he parks behind me, says this happens all the time. These Penske vans, he's like, this is not the first time I've seen a Penske van break down right here. And I was like, okay.
Mm.
And yeah, it's
like the Bermuda Triangle, but Arkansas.
It's okay. But yeah, I called up Penske and they told me they were going to replace the van. And but they couldn't get it to me until way later into the night. So let's just shorten up the story there. We actually had a tow truck come pick up the van and get us off the interstate. And we went to a Days Inn, and the construction workers in that area had rented all the rooms at the Days Inn and all the other hotels in the 30 mile radius.
Oh my God.
And I was like, oh, wonderful. And I'm like, what time? And I called the people at Penske. I was like, what time is this van showing up? They're like, in 4 more hours. And at this point, it was already midnight.
How does it take 4 hours to get a van out to you?
Well, because they had to take the original van and bring it to the nearest Penske because we were in the middle of nowhere, 2 hours away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to give you a new van unless they can get the old one back because, you know, that's how that works. And it's just the way that the world works. And so, yeah. And me, Joel, and Nate are all standing there in the darkness. At one point, me, Nate, and Joel were standing there in the darkness, like not saying anything to each other. Like, Nate's like kicking rocks in the parking lot. And Joel's leaning on his truck, just staring in the distance. And I'm just looking up at a tree, watching the wind. We're all just like so done. And then I go over to Nate and Joel, and I'm like, all right, I'm making a cot in the back of the van, and I'm sleeping in the back of this van tonight. So yeah, it was fine. We got the new van. We packed out the new one. And then it was kind of ironic and kind of funny at the same time. It's like ironic that we're going to make it, but then we didn't. But then we drove in because we woke up at like 6 o'clock that morning because we barely slept, and we drove in to Collinsville, and we got here right when the doors opened to set up. So we were late. So
it's like pulling all nighter. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly. That's how it felt. And I was exhausted, but we got everything set up. I got the show trees onto the floor. And I got my vendor booth set up and talked to Jesse and told him what was going on. And you know, he's like, y'all are the first in the door this morning. So, you know, have fun, rest, do your thing.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It's like everything that could go wrong did go wrong. I'm glad that the trees were okay though, because like if you'd gone off in off a into a ditch or you know, that could have just been, I mean,
it could have been way worse.
It could have been so much worse. And like also I'm glad you didn't die. That's also great. So yeah,
thank you for that.
You know, there's that. You're welcome. But and, no, I
go ahead.
I was just gonna say, so U of M sent an azalea down with our Bonsai Tech, and I guess I heard from my boss over there the next day that they actually hit a deer on their way to Bonsai Central, and same kind of situation. They had to have the university drive out a new van and replace it. Tree was fine. He was fine. Van was, you know, fine-ish. Don't know about the deer. I guess it ran away. So it's probably not fine, but
some,
you know,
deer,
but like,
are tough. They get hit and they just like walk off.
If it just like bounced off the front. Yeah. I don't know exactly the situation, but yeah, it's like, maybe it's a good thing I didn't go to this show. Cause, it sounds like traveling there is a little bit dicey. So,
and just putting it out there, Tyler Sherrod also had an issue. He had a flat tire on his U-Haul trailer.
Oh God.
It was like all kinds of stuff happened.
Oh man. Cause like, I was going to say, this isn't your first like issue with Penske. Maybe you should switch over to U-Haul, but now if he's getting flat tires too, oh my gosh.
That was a U-Haul trailer, but just to put it out there, no one's at fault here. These are all acts of the road, the open road. Take a road trip and like a long distance road trip. Yeah, we had a Hertz car one time. Me and Caitlin took a trip to New Mexico, but we did drive that car really hard. And we drove it from Louisiana all the way up into Albuquerque, New Mexico, 16 hours. It was amazing. It was a great drive. And we were driving it home, and the car was like, nope. And the radiator popped on it. Yeah, we drove the crap out of the thing. It was a brand new Honda or something, too. It was kind of fun. But yeah, we drove it a lot harder than that. We ended up driving up into Colorado at one point, down to Roswell for my 30th birthday, because I wanted to see aliens stuff, because I'm a dork. But yeah. Anyway, travel is that's
travel,
not
am
today's
right?
topic.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're going to a convention, know that there are a couple of different leaps and bounds you might have to go through. Whether you're just going to take a flight, lucky you. I'm just kidding. No, it's cool. Taking a flight. Caitlin flew in on a plane for this to come hang out, so it's whatever, but I had to drive. But yeah, like hats off to all the people for BCI last weekend and Bonsai Central this week that drove in and presented their trees. That is, it's not an easy task.
No, it is not.
Not only do you have to prep your tree and make sure everything's perfect, you have to be growing that tree for the first 2 years of getting prepped for that. You have to like, I want to show this tree, and you go through it, and you make sure everything's going to look well. And then next cycle, that next year, you're like, you've already got first stage of refinement going down, and you get into the next stage of refinement. That's the show, your refinement for your show. That's usually how most people will do it, because, and I do that too, because it's a choice for me, because typically I repot trees and then I'll wait a full year to see how it reacts. And then in next year, if I'm good, then I'll start doing some tight refinement stuff to get ready for a show. And that usually works out. So yeah, hats off to people who understand that process, and all the people that brought amazing trees. I mean, both shows had two different flavors, which I love that. BCI had a good number of trees. I saw a lot of Texas native trees. I love seeing Texas native trees like cedar elms. We'll probably talk about one in our little critique section here. I saw loblolly pines at the BCI show. That was really awesome.
That's fun.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just really cool. And then Bonsai Central, when they said the best in the mid, to bringing the best to the Midwest, they were not joking. We saw some really
they're not joking.
Yeah,
I've seen pictures from both shows, and great stuff at both. I've been really impressed with the stuff I've seen at Bonsai Central. There's some really, 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 really lovely stuff there. So I'm hope they do it again, because I really want to come and see.
Yeah, and you'll be closer this time.
Yeah, for sure.
And then I know Grand Rapids is going to have ABS show.
ABS, yeah.
So unfortunately, you can't make that one. If you're a listener and you attend ABS and you see some trees that you think are cool and you'd like us to talk about them, or you just want to shoot us some photos, because we love to see what's going on over there. Of course, they're going to get shared and stuff, but yeah, hit us up. We would love to talk bonsai with you and talk any trees that you thought were interesting in the show. And speaking of talking bonsai, I know we had a question in the Discord that was directed at us. This is from Taylor. It's directed at me and you. Great episode this week. I think that's in reference to, they said, love the idea of had Evan split into what techniques and tasks should be focused on and performed in time of development and refinement. So thank you for that comment. And then quick question, are the tips you discussed of for Japanese maple fairly similar to Trident maple? Any major differences in the care for them? So I guess that's directed for you, Carmen, because you did a lot of Japanese maple talk.
Yeah, I think the probably the biggest thing is that Trident maple aren't quite as cold hardy, so they need a little bit more winter protection than the Japanese maple, which I mean, we leave outside on the ground all winter here in Portland, but I mean, we don't have a lot of, below zero weather here, or below freezing weather, I should say. The Tridents, they always go into the greenhouse for just a couple more degrees of protection. I think the other thing too is that Tridents tend to be a little bit stronger, so sometimes you can get more than one defoliation in on them. And also, when you're defoliating, sometimes you can take off more than you would with a Japanese maple. But overall, the development techniques, I think, are quite similar as far as, timing and how you do your cuts and that kind of thing.
I hope that helps you out.
Yeah.
I hope that helps you out. Thank you for that question. It's an awesome question. And then we have Bent Zero. It's from the Discord. His name's Bent Zero in the chat here. So I'm sure it's one of the Bentleys. In an episode, you asked for pictures of a tree from one of those bonsai kits. I grew this Japanese black pine from a kit gifted to me in 2016. As with most people that get those kits, I didn't know Jack about bonsai. I don't know Jack either. He seems like a nice guy, though. I hear a lot about people not knowing him. I didn't know Jack about bonsai at the time, but I was and slash am an avid gardener. So I guess this developed since 2016. So I had it in a terracotta pot for a few years where it was just kind of where it just kind of sat there. I put it in the ground in a grow bag 3 years from where it spent. Where it went from, okay, so it went into the ground in a grow bag from 3 years, where it went from a Sharpie to what it is now. So Sharpie size, yeah. I had to move, so I pulled it out of the ground and moved it into a box. So it looks like a, yeah, it's a wooden painted box. It's not grown well, but I'm proud to say that I grew it. I'm not too familiar with working with pines, so it'll be fun. I'm not sure what kind of pine. Oh, Japanese black pine. I'm sorry, I missed that way earlier. So I'm looking at the pictures. I mean, if you guys are in the Discord, you can go over there. But it was posted a little while back, and you don't really it, for the guys that for you guys that are not in the Discord, I could just describe it really lightly to you. Yeah. So he used a grow bag, which is very typical of like nursery growing work. Like a lot of nurseries, this is standard use. So you let the pine grow into the grow bag, and it grows the finer feeder roots will attempt to grow through the bag, and so it kind of keeps everything nice and tight. And for Japanese black pines, this is great because you don't want the big giant chunky tap roots going all over the place because it's difficult to cut them and collect them back out of the ground because you cause a lot of harm to the tree. So it's a good method to do that. In fact, that's what they did at Telperion Farms back when they were get those big giant chunky black pines. In fact, I saw two of them at Bonsai Central. A vendor was selling two monster.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, you could tell one
Cool.
was a. Go ahead.
They're big. I did a
Hey,
pre-styling on one of them over the winter, and that thing was in like a 5 gallon, at
Oh,
least
yeah.
5 gallon grow container, and the trunk was probably, I don't know, 8 inch diameter. It was
Oh, yeah.
huge.
They're almost like full size trees feeling.
Yeah,
And
they all have to get kind of cut down.
yeah, and then I'll have to send you a picture of the few I saw in the vendor room, Carmen. So I'll do that for you tomorrow. But yeah, just like you described, 8 inches. This one in the vendor room was probably close to 10. This thing's a beast. And so yeah, it's pretty standard nursery work for that type of development. And then he's got it moved over to a box, and I do see a really wonderful base and some good back budding. you know.
Yeah, you know, for as far as growing things from seed, black pine is pretty easy to grow from seed. So that's really cool. And then honestly, there's some good movement in that trunk, and that's a nice little nabari that's going on there. So I think with, you know, in it's going to be, you know, a while before it's, you know, at a show like Bonsai Central, but it's on its way. It's not a bad tree. That's a really good start, especially from a seed from somebody who doesn't know bonsai, you know, like
early on. Yeah. This was early 2016. On, so. Yeah. And like 10 years ago, there you go.
Give it another 10 years and you could have a, you could be well on your way to, you know, refinement.
So yeah, thank you so much, Bent Zero, for sharing that bonsai starter kit story. We did ask for more. Many, you know, I guess has more stories of like my first bonsai tree that went on to be more than I thought it would be as I got into bonsai. We love these stories because, like I was talking, I usually tend to like talk down on the seed kits.
I always talk down on the seed kits
because it's a generally bad idea because it's just, you don't know if the seeds are going to work out.
But it's just not a good way to start bonsai, but
yeah, but this was a happy case. This happened.
It was,
this was a good one.
Yeah.
This had a happy ending and it's still, and it doesn't, it's not over. You can still make a great tree.
It's not over.
Yeah. I saw some stuff added to the cutting challenge. Awesome. I love seeing some cutting challenge stuff. I see somebody took some seedling cuttings from black pines. That's awesome. Really, really good job. Seeing some Portulacaria in here. And yeah, lots of really cool stuff. Y'all keep contributing to the cutting challenge. I'm going to update you guys on my sea hibiscus and my water elms that I have been working on for the cutting challenge. So you guys can see where I'm at after we started this about a year ago. Anyway, let's get on to the
critiques. My cuttings are so slow, you know,
I'm sorry.
Not fair. Mine have roots and they have like leaves. That. No, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's my cuttings suck.
I believe you.
It's just because our weather is, hey, those are good. I only killed one.
So the Primno Japonicas, I shipped Carmen some up. What was that, like a year ago or two?
I think it was two.
2 years?
It was 2 years.
How big did those get and wind up getting?
They're not very big yet, but I'm also trying to keep them small. So
yeah,
one I've done in kind of a cosmic style, and one I'm doing like a three tree group, and then one I'm just going to do as kind of like a informal upright shohin. But I mean, I'm keeping them all like relatively small.
I mean, so, they're great. They're great huge shohin, and then long term growing them out there, awesome. But yeah, look at you doing a cosmic style. That's
look good. At me.
Yeah. Look at me. Good luck. It's gonna
thank
be
you
long term.
Mm-hmm.
Hey everyone, this is John Eads, founder of Left Coast Bonsai and proud supporter of the Little Things for Bonsai People podcast. I'm breaking into your feed today to let you know about a few exciting things we're doing here at Left Coast Bonsai. We're a small, family-owned bonsai nursery that's focused on producing high-quality bonsai plant material, as well as sourcing hard-to-find supplies for growing in your own yard. For many of us, winter is a time to pause and reflect on the year ahead. Now's a good time to decide what seedlings and supplies you need for the upcoming season. We have a large selection of seedlings that will begin shipping out mid-February for our spring season. You can also order baskets, felt bags, or aluminum wire. In addition to the seedlings and supplies, I also teach classes and study groups on a broad range of subjects, including growing trees from scratch. I hope to hear from you soon and would love to talk about how we can support your bonsai growing journey. You can find us online at leftcoastbonsai.com, on Instagram at leftcoastbonsai, or send me an email at talk@leftcoastbonsai.com. Cheers!
This podcast is supported by Bonsai Bar, the beginner bonsai workshop popping up in breweries all across the Northeast. Bonsai Bar is 2 hours of tiny tree goodness disguised as a night out with friends. Come grab drinks, create a new tree, and watch as your friends and family get the bug for bonsai. Bonsai Bar is always looking for teachers and assistants, and you listen to this podcast, so you're probably already qualified. Bring your knowledge out to the bar. Apply today. Find event tickets, contact info, and more at bonsaibar.com.
So we're doing this first critique on this tree, and I do want to specify, guys, so I always have to put a disclaimer out. We're not doing critiques to be mean. We're not doing critiques to poop on people's trees.
I'm just kidding.
These are Yeah, no, this is constructive criticism, as if you were in art class. And this is all for educational purposes. So we get to look at some cool trees and trees that and are in all stages of different, you know, developmental stages, different species, different takes on these. And my background is different from Carmen's. And when we have Mike on, his background is completely different approaches and stuff. So this is for educational purposes. And reminds me, like today I was looking at now went around and looked at some trees. Now, I'm sorry, I don't want to butcher his last name.
Tokutake.
Tokutake went around and was looking at some trees with me today. What my trees that were in the display at Bonsai Central. And he said, don't take this as harsh criticisms because I want to tell you how I think you could further this along. That's exactly what we want to do here. That's what we're trying to establish. You know, we're not trying to say your tree sucks now, you can make it better. We're trying to say educational, like what do we think? What's this tree look like? And so go over to our Instagram, Little Things for Bonsai People, and go to the correspond in the description what episode the critiques will line up with. So the first tree we're looking at is a basil blue wood. Do you see that one, Carmen?
Yeah, I don't know that variety at all.
Yeah, me either. And this is something that, and I don't want to list, and this is another thing, we don't list the artists because we don't want to like sit here and, you know, but I do know the artist. I saw this tree before they put it into the show and I really liked this tree. I thought this was a really cool tree and I wanted to talk about it because it's got some really interesting things going on here. And so I'd have to do a little bit of research on this species, but if you look at the image, it's going to be the first one. It's a very twisty trunk and it's got a little succulent cactus accent on it, on the side of it. So before I kind of go into it, let's see, what do you think, Carmen? What do you see initially with this tree?
So I really like the movement of the trunk a lot. That's the thing that really pulled me into this one. The deadwood, especially right near the base, is really, really fun. And I like the shari that kind of goes all the way up and twists around the trunk. So it's not just a single shari line, you know, all along the front. It actually goes around the back and back to the front. It gives you this real twisty appearance. My only comment about the movement of the trunk is that it does have a little bit of an S curve in it. So I'm curious if it could be tipped a little bit one way or another to minimize that a bit, but not really get rid of the movement. But even with that little bit of S-iness, I still really like it because the turns on it are pretty sharp. There's some smooth turns, some sharp turns, so it's kind of mixed up. And then I would love to see a little bit more refinement in the canopy, so maybe some clarity between pads, and that could just be done by pruning. And then maybe a little bit more twigginess, especially on that bit that's coming down to the left towards the cactus. But overall, I think it's a really fun tree. It's cool to see something like this.
Yeah. Its foliage looks like a Vietnamese bluebell.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen one of those before?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. And
what's it called again?
Basil. No, I'm sorry. Did I say basil the first time? It's Brazil bluewood.
Ah, okay. I still don't know what it is, but I'm going to Google it now.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Brazil bluewood. So while you look up and get a little bit of context, I'll kind of give my critique here. And you could tell us like origin or like what's the typical habit of this tree. Before we go into that,
it's in the buckthorn family. That makes sense.
Yeah. So initially when I look at this, I know we can probably go for what we would typically call a Boonjin or a literati style in the bonsai world. For our listeners that are not familiar, that is the brushstroke or caricature form or style in either bonsai or pinjing. It's actually seen a lot more. And so, yes, this trunk has those characteristics to be in that style, but it looks like the artist chose to go a little bit more informal with his canopy. Canopy styling. And it feels a little heavy on the right side. And, you know, if we're doing an old Boonjin or Pinjing kind of feel, you would be a lot lighter. There's a lot of weight. because there's a some back branches that drop in into the back here, and they look wonderful back there, and it's giving some depth to the overall feel, and it calls attention to that awesome curve where you see that deadwood, and this deadwood's twisting all the way up. It's like the best part of this whole tree. And I do have a the next image that's going to be on Instagram. It's a zoom in of that deadwood. It's actually got some really cool bark. I know you can't see it, Carmen. I didn't share it to you, but you can believe me. The bark is the bark is like a whitish grayish color. It's pretty close to the color of the deadwood. So you know, I would probably even change the, like you said, the angle. I think would help a lot. And then getting weight off the right side, ever so slightly, lightening the canopy to make it feel older and more not so heavy. So it feels like, because like you said, it has that S curve kind of movement. It almost feels spring like with too much up there, you know?
Yeah, I think, yeah, defining your pads up there, I think will take a lot of that weight out. And I feel like because the canopy is so wide, it needs kind of a wide pot. So I think if you, you know, lighten up the canopy a little, you might be able to go into a slightly smaller pot. And I love the slab that it's on, maybe something a little bit thinner. And then for the accent, maybe something a little bit, I like the cactus, but maybe for the Jita that it's on, something a little bit smaller just to make the tree look a little bit bigger. But I love that there's a little cactus with, you know, the native tree. Overall, super fun, very nice.
Yeah, very flexible, very fun display. I love seeing displays like this. So,
yeah.
But yeah, well, did you find background on this species and something interesting about them?
That it's a native, semi-evergreen in the buckthorn family.
It's a native, even though it says Brazil?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Native to, I'm guessing, Texas, because this was the Texas show, by the way. Okay.
Yep, Texas. Texas. Yeah.
What do you know? What part of Texas is it? More like desert?
South Texas.
Okay, so we're close to the border and stuff down there. Okay, there. It's a really cool tree. I mean, you know, there's some really awesome Texas natives that I'm getting into as I go here, and this thing was really cool, and I figured it was a Texas native based off of the artist, but also I like this tree a lot, and I saw a lot of potential, and you know, and here's another thing, this is something that we talked about, like I mentioned earlier when me and Now were talking about bald cypresses that I had presented at Bonsai Central here. He's like, I don't understand how the trees grow in your range. But after explaining to you how things work in my part of Louisiana, he was like, I see where you're going. The artist statement's a little bit different whenever you get that. So bonsai can be that, you know, you're showing something about a species that they are either not aware of or have they seen before and they haven't seen it done quite that way. You know, obviously you have presented it that way with intention, you know?
Yes. So. Yep. Cool. There can always be differences. And just to jump back on your disclaimer, like, about, you know, we're not trying to make, you know, hurt anybody's feelings. We're just trying to improve trees or make critiques. I mean, we take students through, you know, the garden here in Portland and critique Michael's trees, you know, and put them on, you know, the number scale of 1 to 10 and figure out what we can do to make them better or find out where the problems are. It's all part of, you know, even those, I think, especially those that a high level of bonsai are looking for these things specifically. So it's all just for the whole improvement overall of bonsai.
Yeah. And so like bonsai is never finished. It's always changing. And so when the presenter goes in and they show that tree and then after a while, the most shows, you don't want to show the same tree back to back to back every single year. Most shows like Nationals, for instance, in Rochester, like they make you wait 6 years before you can present that tree again. And that's why we're doing these critiques, because something can change, something can improve, or So these are considerations by bonsai artists as we move forward. And also for our younger bonsai enthusiasts. So not like our age younger, but like as a bonsai enthusiast age and training, of training yourself for getting an eye for these things in bonsai, this is really important. And you'll pick up on these things too as you look at more trees. So go to conventions and come look at trees with us. So the next tree is a cedar elm. Can you see it, Carmen? Yeah, this thing is huge. It doesn't look, you can't really tell how big it is unless you're in the presence of a tree like this. I also got to meet the artist of this tree, a very wonderful artist, has been working in bonsai for some time, and this tree is quite old. It's been in training for a while, and it's very obvious because for a cedar elm of this scale, so when I say of this scale, this thing was easily right over 4 feet tall. So it on the table, it doesn't look that tall, but you can see the display cloth behind it, like the drapery.
Right. Yeah. It, that tells you just how tall this thing is.
Yeah. It's maxing out. It's huge. It has presence, but this tree, I want to talk about this one because this is in a different style. And this was a style that was brought to my attention, when I was at BCI, because when we were there, there was a demonstration on a other cedar elm, sort of like this one in a way, where they demonstrated a different style of bonsai, where it was more of a Chinese approach. It was more of a pinzai or more of a pinjing approach to creating bonsai. And instead of relying on your typical triangle shape, they chose to go with, I forgot the exact origins of this style, but it's depending more on big, giant, chunky branches to be basically like the weight and the impact of the overall design. And then those branches have smaller, twiggier branches. It's not like heavily ramified in some spots. Instead, there's these heavy, giant, weighted branches on there. And I thought this tree pulled it off pretty well. And so, as you can see, there's a lot of different flow. And this is one of the things that's interesting is looking at this, there's a lot of counterflow in this tree. Because of the weight of the branches, it's kind of hard to pick out where the defined top is. So, and another reason why I thought this tree was significant too is because I know cedar elm, and this is a big tree, and the wounds were healed. So this is a demonstration of like taking your time to heal wounds on a big collected native deciduous tree. So I've already kind of talked through it a little bit on my introduction to this, and cedar elms are native to Texas all the way into my range. And I think they go even further than that. Into the Carolinas, and they're very close relative to the winged elm, which is another one of my my sweet babies as far as my favorite species. But yeah, they're pretty resilient, grow very fast, and they're easy to pull off these kind of big granulous deciduous stylings with them. And so for critiquing this thing, it's very difficult because it's a different style of bonsai that we don't see very often, but this was executed very well. I do have to say that if we were doing a bonsai design here, we're going straight bonsai. Some people would say, obviously, at that first, like where the tree curves out and you have that big giant branch that points to the left, most people would be like, why is that there? We need to chop that off. And then you have that branch that comes off and it looks like a secondary trunk towards the right. And you're like, that one is great, but it's just a little too long, is what most people would say. And you would get that triangle shape pretty quick in this tree if you did that. Anyway, so yeah, because of the style dictates a different type of expression of an, they say truly old trees have big, big branches that over time as they mature, they might die back naturally from certain conditions, and then there's little twiggy branches that come up. So I think that's pretty awesome look. And in person, of course, this thing is more impressive, but I would bring in the big chunky pieces a little bit. And if it really is old and it's scarless, that is not nearly as believable, but it might be within the style of this tree too. But yeah, overall, it's got some pretty good taper, but there's a lot of straighter lines in this tree. And this is something you can't really fix in an old tree like this, you know, like where it comes up and it curves, and you have where you can see the junction basically where it was cut and it was regrown to heal that wound. It does go pretty straight. So as far as gestural and how much movement is in this tree. And there's that straight section. That straight section is a little distracting, really, to me. And then that branch to the left is pretty long. So, and there's a nice little curved section right behind where it comes up and it juts straight up. I think even going back to there would be pretty nice. And another thing that they do with this particular style, I was told, is that they always defoliate the trees when they show them. Always. So it's very particular to this style of bonsai. And then overall, the pot and everything. We didn't talk about the pot on the previous tree. Let's see. And it's pretty standard. If you go back to the blue wood and you see that's like around, that's pretty standard for a literati tree. Whereas this is a deciduous tree out of leaf or intentionally defoliated, and it's this unglazed, big, chunky square pot, which it matches the trunk. It's very nice, actually. And it's a banded pot, so it kind of brings your, a little bit more of a dressed up elegance to this big chunky thing. But I think it would look cool in a glaze, like splattery glazed Chinese pot. Like, you know what I mean? Like those ones that look like you can see the ripples in the glaze. So I think that would be cool. And so what do you think, Carmen?
If I hadn't known that this was a different style, I would probably be a little bit more harsh
Yeah,
than
that's why
knowing.
it's, yeah,
So
it's interesting.
without that context, it's kind of hard to judge. And I'm not familiar with that style, so I can't speak to, how cool, how well it represents that, but I will, based off of what you've told me, that's really interesting. I've totally unfamiliar with that. For me, it's not particularly my taste. If we were going with more of a traditional, I can speak to it in traditional bonsai, so I think that's probably what I will do. I'd probably, prefer it in more of the traditional Japanese style without the long, chunky extensions on those two lower branches. Those could be cut back to where there's a little bit more twigging and then developed from there out. I think I would, that's what I'm used to. But this is a really interesting look. I think it will outgrow that kind of, that sharp, straight bit where the trunk was chopped and it goes straight for a bit. I think it'll outgrow that and that will eventually become kind of a nice curve. I think the pot is a little bit small. I'd prefer something a little bit more shallow and a little bit longer. I'd like the idea that you had of a glazed pot. But this is a really, I mean, it's a really interesting composition. I've, like I said, I'm not familiar with this style, so it's something new to me. It is a very old tree. It's pretty clear that it's taken
A
a
long
lot of
time.
a long time, a lot of really hard work to cover up all those old wounds. There's really nice bark on it. There's great, little movements in all of the twigging and branching. So, I mean, in that respect, well done. So yeah, super interesting tree. Never seen anything like it.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, yeah, it's like that's one of the things too. It called my attention with that straight section. It's like all every single branch has some kind of movement in it, except for right there. And I'm just like that kind of gets that kind of makes it fall a little bit for me on that. Like it doesn't fall apart because it's so grandiose and so big. And sometimes big trees, it's really difficult to fix those kind of flaws in a tree, you know.
I think over time, that'll smooth out to be more of a curve instead of a angle. But yeah, it's a little bit at the
Little,
moment when it's defoliated, you can really see it. So.
yeah, calls attention to it. But yeah, that's another thing. It's like for our listeners that are beginning and they get into bonsai, and they haven't seen a tree represented like this, a deciduous tree with no leaves on it. This is extremely intentional. Like this is to show the bones. So we in bonsai, we don't just say bonsai because we're saying the word bone. That's not. It's just that's the Japanese pronunciation of like how to get the first part of the word, but it does kind of help us remember that the bones, like the bone structure, is talked about in bonsai a lot. And this is really important. And in deciduous trees, when they're defoliated, nothing's hidden. No, the scars are wide open for everyone to see, all the flaws, the branch placements, the approaches to how the branches are laid out. Everything's out there to see. So a great deciduous bonsai looks great with no leaves on it. So this one looks good with no leaves on it. I do like this a lot.
It's cool to be able to see the structure because I can imagine it with, all the leaves on. The silhouette is very classical. You
For
wouldn't know
sure.
about those all that branching if you know, if there was all that there. So,
and so I chose the first couple of options for this critique, and Carmen chose the next couple of options, and it's these are some spicy picks. I like these trees a lot. And I talked to a lot of the artists in the show, a lot of people that presented these trees. I know every one of these trees, and I love spending a lot of time on the floor, with Bonsai and stuff, and just looking them over and over and over again. I can like at Bonsai Central for here, for instance. I went on the show floor like three times today. I can't get enough. I always go back for more. And then I catch the artists in there, and I love to talk to them. I know background on. It depends on which tree you want to talk about, Carmen. Is it the whole composition itself, or is it the pine, or is it the chochubai?
It's the whole composition.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this next one is a Japanese black pine grown onto a imported stone. And then it has a beautiful chochubai at the left as the ground plant. So the pine is representing like the mountain-hugging component, and then there is a beautiful sweet little, I love the pot on the accent. It's awesome.
Yeah,
pot.
That's really fun. I love when people get really fun with their accent plants. So
I told you about the one I got from Now's wife, mm-hmm. Mary.
Yeah, Mary.
Mm-hmm. She made
she does gorgeous little hand-painted pots, just stunning.
Yep. Just a shout out to Mary J. Lee. You go over to San Sansoku Sansoku on Instagram, and check out her painted pots. I got a pot with plovers, like beach, like seafaring plovers and waves on it, and it's so precious. And this pot reminds me of like that hand painted style in this particular display here. So yeah. Just remember that. I love painted pots. They bring a special thing to displays. So I'll let you take the lead on this one, because you chose this one, and I think for an obvious reason. So what are we looking at?
I mean, I really love the black pine. I think the root over rock is done very well. It's the needles are in proportion to the tree, which can be hard to do. It's well refined. It's got some age to it. Really interesting choice of pot with it. It's almost Bunjin-esque. But yeah, it just, this one really strikes me. It's a very intricate tree. The pot, you know, has some nice detail to kind of show that off. The stand, I like the height. I think the stand is a little bit ornate. I'd like something a little bit simpler, I think, because both the pot and the stand with the chochubai are a little bit more simple. So I think that the height of the stand for the pine is a little bit much. If the chochubai wasn't there, I think it would be okay. But I think because everything with the chochubai is so kind of plain, not in a bad way, it's just much more simple. But yeah, love the black pine. It's fun to see this kind of display with two trees. Chojubai is very nice, good pot, nice little stand, both very simple to kind of accentuate the complexity of the chojubai itself. I'd like to see a little bit more directionality with the chojubai. The pine is very directional. Yeah. It'd be nice to see the chojubai just be a little bit more directional to the right. So maybe shorten up the left side a little bit and extend the right side a little bit. Accent is great. Very nice color, interesting pot. The jita is different than both of the stands. The stands are different from each other. So there's enough, you know, difference between everything in here to make it complex, but it all, you know, mostly goes together. I just think you don't see a lot of, you know, two tree displays like this. So it's nice to see something a little bit different. And to see chochubai and black pine together is kind of fun.
Yeah. It's Japanese black pine and Japanese quince. That's very, very, very classical, you know, two really great species. We can actually grow those here in Southeast Louisiana. You can grow them in Portland. You can grow these trees in a lot of places. They're very, very flexible. As a note to our listeners that are newer to bonsai, Carmen pointing out that the stands are different and the pots are different. And even the jita that little accent plant is sitting on is called a jita. It's a thin piece of wood shaved from either a burrow or a log of wood that was very interesting in shape. And so, yeah, we got different colors here. I love the color palette. I love I really like it whenever a chochubai is presented in a very square pot. I love that. It's really cool looking. Mm-hmm. You don't see very square, just straightforward glazed containers like this. But mm-hmm. For some reason, I've seen a good number of chochubai in square pots. I guess it's just a...
Yeah, it's like a pine pot, but it's glazed. And then there's a deciduous tree in it. Like it feels kind of backwards, but chochubai are so kind of wild and there's so much movement they're always, a lot of times they're clumps. So having this kind of really strong pot goes really well with them. Yeah. And then, but then glazing it, you know, you're not, it's makes it really not a conifer pot, and you can play with some really fun colors too.
Yeah. And like, I really enjoy chochubai now, thanks to Michael Hagedorn and you. And so, I'm starting to understand the craze on them. And so I do agree. The chochubai could use some dramatic movement. It's very grounded, but yet very uniform and needs more asymmetry. I could see that for sure. Fun fact about the black pine. I spoke with the artist and it was grown from seed.
Oh, wow. Do you know how old it is?
I can't remember the age at the moment, but they grew it themselves. It's pretty awesome. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's got some bark. It doesn't look super, super old, but
it's a little younger,
you know, but it's even still the level of refinement for it, for whatever age it is. It's good. It's very good. And it's only going to get better. So imagine it in like 50 years when it's eaten that rock halfway, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I really enjoy that dropping branch off the black pine. Mm-hmm. It has like a very good muscular nature to it, like a flexing arm coming down. It's got, and it just holds that foliage floating up there. The foliage doesn't feel at all loose or it doesn't feel it like it's not at all detached feeling. It's very like the pine is gripping very, very hard right there. It just looks cool. And
I love the pot with it because it's like balanced. It's like balanced on a point, and it just really shows off the skill level of the balance and asymmetry of that pine.
Yeah. And the pot is unglazed, but it's been polished either with oil or it has maybe a little bit of a soda fire effect to it.
Yeah. It might've been burnished. Yeah. It could have been
and it's
a couple different things.
And it's makes fun. That glaze, I mean, like not glaze, but that finish to the pot, which is something we do in bonsai display a lot. Makes the tree feel a lot more settled and subtle and softer. When a pot
I want the stand to be darker so that the pot shows off more.
I want the stand to be thinner leg, simple dowel style details in between, like you see in some displays like that. And it could be natural wood color. It doesn't have to be a black one. But the wood grain on the stand, though, is very commemorate the artist who made the stand. The stand is gorgeous. Very good wood grain. Very good. And then I'm pretty sure I've seen this foot before. So I think this is a well-known stand maker. I'm bad with names on stand makers. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's a beautiful stand. Yeah. I just don't think it necessarily matches but you know, sometimes, you know, you need height for this, and this might be the only stand option you have, in which case, you know.
Good job. Still. As far as moving the pine forward, like Carmen said, like this is where it takes time. And I know we discussed it a little earlier from our listener who was like, oh yeah, I grew this pine from a seed. I mean, hey, here you go. Like this is like with the application, of course, this took some planning and the planning was executed very well. So it is young still. So it didn't have big chunky bark on it. There was a black pine that won the show for best in show. And the branches were thick. The platy bark was standing off of each piece. Every single branch had platy bark on it. So it just takes time for true mochokome to set into a piece like this. But with time, this will have that true ancient feel. And for our listeners that are not familiar with mochokome, that's a word that we use to describe a truly old bonsai. So, Yeah, the quince is gorgeous and looks great. So, I think we're pretty solid on this one. So let's move on to the next one. So this bonsai in particular is actually I'm very familiar with this one and also the artist.
Is this Dawn's? Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. Yes, sorry, Dawn. So I know we bring her up a lot, but I don't want to have a bias or anything. But this tree is pretty great.
Can we skip it?
No, it's okay. Well, I'd like you to get your feedback on this tree. I could tell her about it too, of course. So, but yeah, this is a Chinese elm. And so I know the context on this tree since she kind of spoiled it, but this was a tree that she initially was not too fond of. She thought it was kind of a junky tree. She got it from, I think she either brought it from Brussels or a garden center. She told me the origins of the tree were not like super fabulous. It was just some tree that she thought was nice and could be have some potential. She ended up working on it with a guest artist over at her home. And he told her that it would be great. And she was like, oh, okay, whatever. And, it actually lived its life, I think, under a bush in her yard for a while because she was just not sure what to do with it. And it just grew out and extended really crazy.
Yep.
But it was initially wired a little bit and given some really, pronounced movement. So it's hard to see under that canopy, but it does come up and then it suddenly curves and twists down gracefully down and gives us these couple of canopies. So you have like two different crowns, it looks like. So there's a semi-cascade crown and then almost a full crown on the top. And so this is my one thing with this tree, because it is kind of like it teeters on that semi-cascade. Semi-cascade means that part of the trunk does ascend down below the rim of the pot, whereas a full cascade, a vast majority of the foliage, if not like 90% of it, will be below the rim.
Yeah.
And so this tree, it's a little heavy on the right side for being for just making the suggestion that we are going semi-cascade. You know, it has like a Myogi top with a semi-cascade arm sticking on the side, which, you know, but other than that, this is the kind of stand that I'm kind of was alluding to with the pine, and you were alluding to with the pine as well.
Something like this would be great.
Yeah, simpler and lets the pines shine. And this tree here, this is the artist Dawn. Anyway. So she's made some really good choices. The only thing that kind of, you know, I look at this in Bonsai Display a lot is that if we're doing an accent with our trees, which most typically we do in a lot of Bonsai convention displays like this, you don't want a round pot with a round pot. You usually want your accent to be a different shape and different glaze, different color, unglazed versus, at least it's a glazed pot with an unglazed pot with a tree. And it's very interesting too, because the Chinese elm is a very, it's usually a feminine tree. It's usually got a glossy leaf and it's usually displayed in a glazed container, and this one's unglazed, and she chose to go with this, and it is a very interesting design. But yeah, that's just that one little thing. It's like, I would prefer to see the Kosomono chose to be simpler and also in a different style of container, and the Jita to be a little bit more interesting, kind of like a wood block natural edge Jita or something else. You know, a stone would even be cool.
Stone.
But anyway, you go ahead and give me your critiques on this one too.
Sure. Yeah. I really like this tree. I don't think the right side's too long. I think it needs that to balance out that left branch, and the movement of the trunk and that cascading arm is enough to, you know, give you that flow. But also I'm not there, so it's hard to judge without actually seeing it in person. There's that branch kind of in the front coming down, maybe it looks a little thick, but again, I'm not sure if the proportion of the trunk actually is. But even with that, I think the tree, it's just a really lovely little tree. It's an interesting choice to put it in an unglazed pot, but I think it works. It's very balanced. I like how high it is up off of the table. So that's a great display choice. I think with the accent, I would like a natural edge Jita. The roundness of the pot doesn't really bother me because at least it's a different color. And I think I'm trying to figure out what that little plant in the back is, because it almost looks like beets or Swiss chard or something coming up back there. But I really love it. I think it's really nice and colorful. But I just like the amount of ramification that this tree has. It looks old. I love the shape of the pot, but I'm wondering if maybe a different color of unglazed or something would be
brown.
A little bit brighter, just to really set the tree off. I don't know that it's really making the tree shine enough. But I do really love the shape of it. I think it's a really neat choice. So overall, it's a lovely tree.
Like every once in a while, you guys might hear me and Carmen agree to disagree on things like with the weight of the branch and stuff. And and so I can see that for sure. Yeah, it does weigh that branch. And then, yeah, like you were saying, it's hard to tell without actually seeing it in person. But yeah, that branch, that cascading element of it is quite beefy. So from what I remember, in that weight, that visual weight of that branch curling back on itself towards the pot. It's mm-hmm. yeah, it's really something. And but yeah, it does feel heavy there. I can agree with that. So I guess
it's almost one of those things where, like, maybe that's a flaw that you want to showcase because it is kind of odd.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. The other thing is you could hide it with a little more foliage.
I would also kind of say I like seeing that curve. That is a good showcase piece, mm-hmm. but maybe in the upper right part of the crown of the canopy could have a break in it mm-hmm. and with a pad.
Yeah.
That would help the movement
feel
just so,
a little bit.
Yeah, it would make it feel a little bit lighter. So I make a break mm-hmm. in it. And then there's like a piece that kind of comes down a little bit on the right.
It just needs to get trimmed off.
Mm-hmm. Either that or just have a little bit more stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Or, I don't know. It's kind of like that thing back and forth, like dangly foliage on deciduous trees. Sometimes it's okay every once in a while to have a piece hanging down. But then mm-hmm. we're like being very nitpicky, you know.
Well, yeah, it's also, might not show up when you're in person. You know, it might just be because the angle of the photo.
Exactly.
That happens a lot. You'll see a lot of things in photos that you don't always notice in person. So,
yeah, one leaf. Like, it's so funny.
Oh, one leaf out of place. Oh, my God.
Leaf for leaf on a bonsai sometimes. It's like,
yeah.
Some bonsai artists are very particular. They'll look at literally every leaf. Sometimes mm-hmm. leaves are cut in half or shortened or just chosen for certain sizes, and then they'll go through. There's a lot of stuff that goes into this, guys. So this.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times we've taken a photo of a tree, made the tiniest adjustment, like a quarter inch adjustment, taken another mm-hmm. photo, still not right, made another quarter. Like, it can be, it's the most nitpicky of all the things.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's go on to our final critique tree. And we'll start, we're running longer on this one. It's okay though. So we're going to give you guys some extra content on this one, because like I said, this will be coming out
extra
late.
Extra content.
Yeah. Dun, dun, extra, dun. The, we're going into overtime. So, This tree here, you chose this one as well, mm-hmm. and I will happily talk about this tree. It's a buttonwood. Mm-hmm. So so these are really interesting coastal trees that they could be found down in the Florida Keys or Puerto Rico or bordering the Gulf of Mexico. So it's technically a native, North American native. Mm-hmm. It's really, really on the edge of our native zone. But it's adored by tropical fans and deadwood admirers alike. They call it the Yamadori, but juniper of the tropicals. It's kind of what it's considered. Mm-hmm. It's a really cool tree. And if you guys want to see more information about buttonwoods, we could also bring them up as a species specific episode where we talk about them in length. But if you look up Mary Madison on Facebook, mm-hmm. Not on Facebook, on Google, sorry.
Go to the Buttonwood Queen.
Buttonwood Queen. Thank you. Yes. And she deserves it. She brought the species to light. She created a very classical, historical piece called The Dragon, which John Naka considered to be a bonsai masterpiece. So this species is very, very dynamic, very unique. Broadleaf evergreen tropical plant. You can defoliate it. I've seen some artists defoliate it and present it with a really unique look with deadwood, with really, really, like, you know, because it can give you a really old look. So mm-hmm. it's one of those true like Yamadori feeling plants, because this tree was more than likely collected. It's very, very difficult to achieve this type of look on a buttonwood like this. So then mm-hmm. fun fact, I didn't know what that was as far as the accent on the bottom left.
Yeah, what is that?
I want you to take a guess. I know your first guess is probably going to be wrong, but
at first I thought it was a rock, and then I was like, no, that's not quite right. And then I was like, mangrove root, and then I was like, ooh, not quite right. Is it root? Is it some kind of root?
I thought you were going to guess bald cypress knees at first, but no, it's actually a mangrove.
I thought it might be some kind. Is it mangrove? Yes. Yep. I mean, okay. I knew it wasn't quite bald cypress, but it did look like some kind of knee or some kind of root. So it's mangrove root. Okay. 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 Cool.
Yeah. I had no idea that the mangrove roots could look like that. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. I didn't know that they could have knees quite like that. That's really interesting.
I'll start well on the critique on this one. Trading back and forth. So yeah, the mangrove route, let's just start right there, like at the mangroves. There's a really fun and really cool. But with anything that's displayed as an accent, every piece in your display needs a stand of some kind under it. Doesn't matter if you're showing a stone, you're showing something like this, very organic, like a root or a chunk of something, showing a plant or even another bonsai or something. It's best to get those things up off the table and give them their own presence on, in display. The mangrove is really cool, and it adds a different textural element to this whole thing, and it does suggest a native environment for this buttonwood. There's just, you know, before I get to the overall design of the tree, let's talk about like the color palette of this design and of this display. It's crazy. It's like a rainbow. The mangroves are like yellow. The stand is very orangey reddish. The pot is deep, deep blue, purpley. The tree is green and white and gray. It's so much color. And it might be a little busy. You know what I mean? I do really enjoy it as a composition, but this just comes back to stand selection and both. And I think this tree in the past, other two trees were on fairly tall stands, and being on a tall stand gives great attention to the tree, and it also brings it to a height that the presenter wants the viewer to perceive the tree to be at. So that gives you a horizon line to view the tree at. And so this tree's, I mean, all these trees that are like these semi-cascades or interesting effect trees like this give you a kind of an idea of where this tree sits in its environment. And buttonwoods are on the shoreline, so they're very weird plants. So they grow like in sandy areas close to the shore, and they're affected by salt water and really like windy environments knock them over and twist them around. So being high makes sense up on the stand right here, and it's cool. But yeah, I've seen some really fun designs. I've seen this tree in display in the past at another Texas convention, and sometimes the artist will choose to put this on a big piece of twisted deadwood with a plate.
Ooh,
that's really cool looking.
Interesting.
Some Dan Robinson style stuff there. And so shout out to Dan Robinson as well. He's a cool artist. He's got some really crazy stuff. But yeah, this tree does give you some weird elements, because buttonwoods are fairly known in the bonsai world as far as North American bonsai. At some places, it's kind of like, what in the world's going on here? And so the angle of this tree is great. I love that piece of deadwood that comes up and it feathers up, like it looks like a hand with like little tiny contorted fingers. And
it's gives like, this, hey.
Yeah, it's like, whoa. And it's like catching a wave or something, or it's falling over.
It's like
over.
Its hair is pulling it over. Oh my God.
It's like Dilbert. It's like, Dilbert's tie. if you know, if you know, I just dated myself.
If you know,
there.
You know.
Yeah, I'm that old. Yeah, it's like Dilbert the cartoon strip. The tie is just up in the wind. So it gives us that shoreline windiness, because that, you know, that was a branch and that died, and then it tried to grow this way. It tried to go up, and that died. So it tried to grow down, and that died. And then it twisted under and underneath, and back again. And then you see the tree finally, and the tree is very simple. This is kind of like a literati semi-cascade, so I would call this more of a bullet head. Is what we call it in some circles of bonsai community. So bullet head just means a nail head where it's just flat, which is fine. But I mean, if this thing really is twisted and old, I mean, it almost looks like a UFO in some instances where it's a little too symmetrical right there, because there's a crown that comes up and it points downwards. That's really cool. But yeah, I would make it even simpler, like bring that foliage away from the pot so we can see the pot a little bit more. I do like it when elements foreground and background to each other, and you can give it more depth in that way. So, but the pot color is really pretty with the foliage on this tree. So yeah. I like how it meets that tree at that point very, very precisely at the its horizon, showing you that it is coming down off the shore somewhere or down off wherever cliff or whatever it might be. Although I think with a little bit of an angle change, slightly more over to get it more out, I think that would be cooler, in my opinion, if it was just if it was reaching a little more, because then that dramatic angle change back inwards would be so much more interesting and like tucked in feeling, you know. So twisting it ever so slightly counterclockwise and then over, I think there might be some expression in that deadwood some more, and maybe even see that live vein a little bit more and tell us the story of that.
Yeah.
So what do you think,
Carl? Yeah, I think I agree with you there. It'd be fun to twist this, to do a 360 of this and see if there's another angle that might be a little bit better. Cause I agree with you on that live vein. I'd like to see just a smidge more. And if you could maybe tighten this angle a little bit more, that'd be really fun. But I think overall what struck me about this tree was just the overall presentation of it was really fun. And it made me really feel like it all made sense. Like with the mangrove root down there, like it was either a root or a rock. I wasn't sure exactly what it was, but it was very clear that this tree had like gone through something and was kind of hanging off over, you know, this other piece of root or rock that was down below it. I loved the blue pot with the oranges in the stand and the yellow in the root there. I think the stand might be a little too bright. I love the contrast there, but it's a little too bright. So maybe tone that down just a little bit, but I think the color of the pot, the shape of the pot goes great with the tree. I love the angles on the trunk. I'd love to see one more pad down on the left, a little bit lower cascading, just a, like not too much, but just to make the complexity a little bit more intense here. And then also that would give you it'd help with your flow a little bit more. I mean, the flow is very obviously to the left, but I think just a little bit more complexity of like another low pad on the left would be really nice. So, but it really drew me in, the contrast of the pot and the oranges. And it's another kind of really fun tree that, you know, I feel like we don't see a lot of displays like this. It's much more loud than a lot of the bonsai displays we see. And I think I like that. It's different. So
there's like at Bonsai Central while I'm here in the moment of recording, there's a couple of trees that do have that loud, like there's a color pop that the artist is not scared to lean into. And I love displays like that. I do that every once in a while. If I find the right pot with the right tree that can just support that surprise. And you know, then I think it's really cool. And so like that branch going to the right towards the pot, I was even taking my thumb, looking at the image and covering it up and seeing if it would even look great if it was very minimalized to just that.
I think I'd be happy to shorten it just even a couple inches just to give a little bit more dominance to that left branch. But I think that there's ways to improve it, but I like it. It's fun.
So those are some good, these are some really solid trees from the Texas show, Bonsai on the Bayou. We will follow this episode up with some reflections on Bonsai Central. And also we will go through and do some critiquing on some of the trees that were presented at this show. Of course, we won't do that now because that would be a very long episode. It's been a long day for me.
Late for you.
It's getting later. This overall hitting two conventions back to back, and then I'll be heading up into Northern Ohio and into Cincinnati to do a workshop and demonstration there. Traveling is a huge part of our job as bonsai professionals here. It's necessary to, you know, get out there and teach and get the word out and, you know, help us further our careers. So, it's been kind of a trial, but do you have any closing remarks for this week's episode, Carmen, or are you ready to move on to the wrap up?
I got nothing.
Yeah, cool. Great.
I'm hungry. It's dinner time.
Yeah, at your time, it's dinner. We're past it. We thank you guys for listening so much. And if you made it this far into the episode, I'm sorry, but also thank you. Because sometimes we run a little long on these episodes. It goes late. We get a little kooky sometimes, so we apologize in advance.
I mean, but I love a 3-hour episode, but you know, I might be the only one.
But yeah, let's go ahead and knock out those Patreon. Caitlin's in the background here. Yeah, we're tired. So let me do the Patreon list shout out, and then we will bring us to a close here, and we'll tell you guys to have a great Bonsai week. I know we'll have a double episode, so we'll tell you have a great week twice, probably. But anyway, we'll start our list off with our Bonsai best buds. You guys are so awesome. Vicky Auth, Boyd Snellgrove, Ricky Ruins, Joshua Bentley, Snappy Chappers, Joel Jenkins, Justin Knight, Backyard, Bonsai Australia, Ben Crahan, Green Witch Gardens, Taylor Peacock, Chase Tweet, Austin Atkins, Karen Codwell, Ryan Giordano, Luis Torres, AC Castle, Bonsai Marine, Jess Potts, Chris Fossoon, Timothy Arsenal, Randy Bennett, Timothy, not, you know, I messed up his name.
Not Timothy.
Katrina Ridgeway, LaRon's Bonsai Garden, or Bonsai Yard, Nate Murray, Nancy Hoffman, Joshua Roth Tools, J.M. Stewart Woodworking, Warehouse Rat, David N. Various Bonsai, Sean Seaman, Gilbert Jorez, David J. Bacchini,
Bentocini. Every time.
Yeah. Chantel Wynn, David Smith, Ben Crean, Hist Warrior, Byron Myrick Pottery, Dale, like, I like the just name Dale, Orlando Ferendez, Joseph Dominique, Wesley Thompson, and hold on 1 second. Our newest best bud, pop quiz. Who was our newest best bud, real quick? Do you remember?
I don't remember. Kyle.
Yep.
Kyle Forward. Yep. Forward.
See, we remember, we'll do this list and we just get better and better. And of course, specimen best buds, Unroy UN. Christina Corforia and Bill's Bayou. Bill, I'll put you at the end of every episode every single time, bud. Don't worry about it. And so yeah, go over to underhillbonsai.com and see some articles. Hopefully I'll get some more written here soon, but we're working on some YouTube content really soon. Go over to our YouTube channel. Keep an eye out for that. Fingers crossed that we can get that in development after I'm done traveling. And then of course, we said we were going to short run the little things for Bonsai People t-shirts, but after going to the conventions, I think we're going to run some more shirts here soon. We're going to do some.
Might be a slightly longer run.
Yep. There's a shirt in particular that everyone's been asking for, and we're going to bring it back. And
what?
Yep. So be looking out for that. We're going to announce more printings of that shirt. And then, of course, for Mike Lane, you can go over to kitsunebonsai.com. He's a South Florian bonsai artist that does a lot of work with tropicals, Shohin and Kifushu. He's stepping into bigger shoes with bigger trees. He's told me that recently, so he's upping his bonsai game with his big show trees. Expect to see Mike Lane headlining next year's Bonsai on the Bay in Texas. I can't remember if that's, I think it's
sweet
San Antonio. I can't remember which club is putting it on next year, but Jennifer Price, Mike Lane, and can't remember who the other artist is, but yeah, as we get closer to that, we will be discussing that with Mike, of course. And then for your content and other stuff, Carmen, where can they check out your stuff?
You can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Becoming Bonsai. Also, please check out the Purple Pot Society, which is the National Women's Bonsai Group. And hey, quick shout out to Green Witch Gardens. They just welcomed a new baby last week, so yay!
Yeah, baby! Congratulations. And what's the name of the baby?
His name is Lore.
Awesome. Welcome to the world, Lore. Welcome to the Bonsai family. Yep.
Oh, I'll do a little thing. Yay. Yep. Anyway. Yeah. So you can find me Facebook, Instagram, all that good stuff.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for supporting. Thank you guys for coming and say hey to us at conventions. It's so awesome. Even if you came up to me and said I listened to one episode, it blows my mind. So thank you guys for the support, and we will be checking in with you on the next one.
Bye.